The following podcast contains scenes of abuse, graphic violence, religious sentiments possibly being hurt, new ideologies, a new age spiritual something person. So viewer's discretion is advised, and the better discretion is that you better listen to the podcast because it's freaking amazing and I'm so hyped up on self-love today. No, you're not creeps. Hello, the people of the community, or goldfishes. Welcome to the 19th episode of In the Memory of the Goldfish. And on this episode, we are going to cover the Ammon's haunting. And I'm so excited for it because it has triggered me in so many ways. And I am going to rant about it all. So today, we are actually going to have six segments. I don't know, not specifically six. We're going to have the fishy news. We're going to have the out of the blue. We're going to have the story, the true life inspiration, and then a kind of like my rant on the true life inspiration of it, and then like an expose of the story, why I'm so smart and how I wrote it like I wrote it. I was supposed to be sleeping at this time. Like, I went to bed at 2:30 to wake up at 3:30 to start recording, and I have an exam at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and I was doing that, but I couldn't sleep because my brain was running at 700 miles per hour, like a woman who gave birth to a baby in a car that was going at 60 miles per hour. I just heard the episode recording, which we've done like by far, and it has this sound in it, and I'm not sure where is it coming from, but it's coming from somewhere. My microphone is picking it up, so yeah, ghosts playing some kind of concert sonata with like untuned instruments today. Though before the ghosts of my household decide to scream at my face that I need to fricking sleep, let's dive into the fishy news. The first headline reads, "My teenage son made me an OnlyFans account to earn himself more pocket money." Well, okay, this guy, the fuck? I don't want to presume anything, so let's read further into the article. Leonardo Hathaway is so supportive of his mom's career, he decided to set her up an OnlyFans account so she could continue her glamour modeling career and he could earn extra pocket money. Okay, so what I was thinking is actually much better than the reality. I mean, okay, this is a good way to support your mother. And like, more than that, the porn industry is like really happy today. It's like, God, good fucking script, which actually happened in the real world. So just like vandalize it. And this article is doing a very good job at like, you know, making it sound sexist and annoying and idiotic, whereas it's an actually good thing. He's helping his mother grow in whatever way she wants to. It further says, the idea of our parents taking sexy snaps and posting in their underwear or even completely nude, then sharing them online for all to see is something we really don't want to think about. But one son not only encourages his mom to do that, he went as far as to make an OnlyFans account for her. Just, like, forget about everything. Look at the reporting, how biased, sarcastic, and unidirectional it is, you know? I mean, they don't want to comment about the entire... I personally think that this guy, what he's doing is an amazing job. He's supporting his mom do whatever the fuck she wants to do without judgment. And these people can... what they want to do is judgment. If his mother's sexy and she wants to put her pictures out there, if she wants to show her boobs because she have them, she has the right to. And if he's enabling it because it makes her happy, then who the fuck are you to judge her? But it even says, quote, "We have an incredible relationship between mother and child. I support her choices and I always back it with why shouldn't I?" He adds that he opened the account for his parent on the adult subscription site to help push his mom further in her career and in the hopes he might earn a little extra pocket money as well. Lucene will now be able to post saucy content behind paywall and earn money from subscribers. Okay, saucy, what the fuck? Why are you doing this to people? This was supposed to be a funny news actually, but then I read it and I was like, no, this is not funny. This is actually very important to talk about. And these people are trying to make it funny, whereas it's not. Though an actually funny weird fishy news is, teenager accidentally moves into retirement home after skipping flat viewing. Teenagers sure are messy these days. Thank God I'm not going to be a teenager soon. Like, actually, I'm very sad that I'm not going to be a teenager, because I can justify all my rational behavior by going like, no, I'm a teenager. Anyway, the article reads, a teenager claims that she accidentally moved into a retirement village after signing her tenancy agreement without viewing the property. Madison Kahoot, 19. Oh, she's my age. Wow. Was puzzled when all her neighbors appeared to be over the age of 65 after she moved into a flat in Arkansas. I mean, yeah, she's 19 years old, but I'm basically my age in the human perspective, but I'm as old as the universe. I mean, I'm half celestial, 11th old person. I forgot about that. Anyway, coming back to it, I cannot imagine how this poor girl felt. I mean, you move into a new house and you imagine a hot, saucy guy living next door, roaming shirtless, showing his abs, flexing his pecs, or if you're into a dad bod, then that. But no, it's the grandfather who's roaming shirtless there and burping around. And a sad situation. I mean, she might have grandfather issues and still be into that. Like, I like people who have white hair, not sexually, but I love talking to them. So, but anyway, she has been quoted in the article saying, because most of my neighbors were asleep by the time I get home. One major perk is that I can play music whenever I want to, because some of them can't even hear. Modern problems require modern solutions, and be a bitch to old people and go around saying they cannot hear so I can do whatever the fuck I want to do. Yeah. Talk about being optimistic, because she's doing a very good job at that. A glass half full situation. And kind of dark. I am losing my shit way too much today. There's a lot of mosquitoes in my room, and I burned this little, not burned, like that little mosquito killing repellent thingy, and it is like burning my eyes, and every little thing is burning my brains. And this fishy news, which I absolutely love, and I'm gonna put the link of this on Twitter. And I just realized I can put links on my Twitter and then ask you guys to follow me there to see what I'm talking about, and that way I can grow my Twitter. I just freaking realized this today. The headline is, otter with expensive tastes eat more than 1,000 pounds worth of koi fish from pond. This was so hilarious. I read this and I felt so freaking uncomfortable. Though I'm also validated that I am actually very freaking expensive. Anyway, talking about money, here's a sponsored advertisement. When I said sponsored advertisement, I did like, voila, listen, and like, but then I realized there's no video involved here, so I need not do my hand actions, and I'm doing like hand actions whilst I'm saying this, so I don't learn. Anyway, in Out of the Blue today, I was originally, as we've planned always, that I was gonna cover the mythologies and stuff. But I was just having a conversation with somebody, and therein I said, I am consistently inconsistent with my Instagram and everything that I do in my life. So I actually liked how smart I sounded when I was saying that, and how, you know, new age crap that was. So following with that thing, I will today talk about sex, like we do in Out of the Blue. Now, so basically the reason I'm covering this today is, it's kind of weird that I realized that when I was going through for the fishy news articles and stuff, a lot of articles came out about this specific vibrator, which is intended for the female pleasure. I'm all for it, love it. And then I looked at other sites which were also talking about the said vibrator, and sent me down a thinking hole that We do not talk about sex toys intended for men, or if not men, people who want to penetrate. Like, those are chiefly there either on porn sites, and with the connotation with what porn gives, those kind of sex toys become taboo and non-zealous to talk about. I realize that we as a society nowadays keep on talking about the female pleasure, which is amazing. We talk about the LGBTQ and their sex life, amazing, all for it, support it. But it still is a taboo for us. Oh, my alarm just rang. I was supposed to wake up at this time. I should turn off my alarms most probably. Anyway, I was saying that we really need to start talking about a straight male pleasure, because that sex part we don't want to talk about. If a group of straight men are talking about sex at some place, we normally assume that they are being bitches, which they usually are. They are being highly inappropriate in the way they are speaking, but they do not know what men talk about when it comes to sex. They do not discover themselves properly. For example, there was this show Bonding. I'm pretty sure a lot of you must have seen it. It was all about this little beautiful thing that even with men who are cis and identify themselves as straight, they have a certain amount of sexual impulses which are different from other people. So why aren't we talking about that? We need to normalize that. And while saying this, I realize that I might get some backlash on it. If not backlash, like, I might sound like an hypocrite, and I do, but I realize that even I personally have not been speaking like that, and I've overly criminalized men to an extent. So I'm sorry for that. And let's get this conversation to table whenever we can. Talk about your pleasure. You are a man, and I'm pretty sure not everybody just wants to bang in and feel good about it. There's a lot more to sex for everybody when they're involved in it. So experience it properly. Talk about it. If you want, talk to me about it, though I've never experienced either of those things. But it would be fun if it helps you, if it helps you understand yourself and accept yourself. Please go ahead. We need that. We need an open dialogue with all genders, all sexual orientations, without judgment. And when I say without judgment, it's without judgment for everybody to have a properly balanced society. So yeah, that's my two cents for out of the blue. So yeah, I'm gonna keep this time this one thing short, because I'm not really sure what I'm talking about, being very honest, because I did not do any research into it. It was just what I saw of the things that I'm consuming, the articles that I'm reading, the shows that I'm watching. So like, full disclosure, this is not a well-researched one, so it is ending rather fast. I've not even jotted down the points. I'm looking at the wall and I'm like musing and I'm thinking out loud while I'm saying this. So forgive me if I said something which was wrong or triggered you or anything. That was not my intention. It was just an observation that I made, which made me feel bad about how I have carried out a little bit on this podcast and the things that I've spoken about within my friend circles. So yeah, I'm saying that's it a lot. It's not that's it. So today's episode is about the Ammons haunting. Now, I have named the document the intended story, Knock Knock. But yesterday I came across this word, pandemonium, and I fell in love with it. So I'm thinking I'm going to call this pandemonium. I hope that's the way you pronounce it. And the date that I've given this is 13.772 billion years. The time is immaterial. Oh my god, it is so philosophic. The date is actually the age of the universe, according to what I read on the internet. I could not find like an entire number for it, but yeah. So the story starts. The thunder rolls. It's actually very pleasant. The waves of the universe is visible on each little denture something exists, out of which a little bit of concentrated existence is. Out of what? Okay, I don't understand what I've written in the first paragraph. I know what I wanted to write. What I wanted to write is in the entire universal web where the thunder rolls, there are a little depths where existences happen in concentrated form, and each such concentration of existence creates another web of existences which leads to the next, all that are connected by the loud thundering claps. I have no idea what I wrote, but like this is what I wanted to write. And the last bit, I lay down, reading the webs of energy that mingle with each other as the penguins do when they hunt in the sea. What is a penguin though? Why do I know that it is when I don't see it? I close my eyes on my little island of the sea of thunder. I have found my muse. A penguin. Penguins are actually my muse. I'm gonna draw a penguin for the episode. It's gonna be so cute. But I let my feet lift up. As they do, my body turns to its back, as if I'm bound by little ribbons that hold me as I fall onto the soil of the black pit of my existence. And this motion is basically, you know, when somebody's shot in a film and they fall slowly to their death and then fall on the ground and like thump. That is the vibe that I'm going with. And there's this random bird which starts to sing at 3 a.m. who's like, ooh. And I've talked about her before too, but she's back at it. And she's going to be doing this for like till August. So I'm not going to keep on telling you like, sorry for this disturbance. You better like just get used to it. Okay. As I touch the ground, the black masses of my beautiful children fly as my head and body rests onto them. For my brain being the musing of this creature penguin, I do not know. I see them rising all around me. All 199 of my children. They are all kind of formless, much like my thoughts. All children are formless, they're weird. I love how they twist and turn to become what they want. How clear in their head is that it's fine to wish to change, to make you feel at home within. From knowing yourself doesn't mean that it's important to remain the same. Okay, basically, this story is about a saint, like the POVs of a sentient being. So if it becomes like very mind valley and, you know, spiritual, well, that is exactly what it is supposed to be. So just calm your tits. I sit and close my eyes. Within them, it's weird how what I see in front of me is, and that which is inside me, so similar. I often feel what I see within is wider, grander, and prettier than all that is out as combined. I go to the pit of the lower matters, where I swim into the bright multicolored orbs, radiating heat. Now, lower patterns or whatever that I wrote, I've forgotten what I've written in this one, absolutely, is basically the strata at which the earth is, like our universe, considering that there are no aliens in the entirety of it, but like, yeah, lower strata, as is the lower strata according to me in this story. So what I wrote is lower matters, not lower stratas. As I go to the pit of lower matters, there I swim into the bright multicolored orbs radiating heat, that is the stars, some of which existed and now turned inside out and are eating what they made, the black holes. Others working towards being an all-consuming mass, and some others who are just sitting idly, gazing at what they called the sky. From the looks of it, it is all so serene, so simple, but in its simplicity, that is what I've been warned, hides the capability to make destruction. I stood with them now. I went in with them, how their essences intermingled. One even started to rotate around me. How precious. I feel the cold water touching me, helping my soul feel at home. These penguins, I see them. Then I see them again. They scatter in fear from under me. A thing brown and blubbery came flying into the water, cutting the water like a like a knife. The rest of them went on to flee. The one who was stoic with me seemed to not care less. You know, I've realized that the reason I kept this is that the people who are like so super duper amused with ghosts, demons and such, they don't have a very strong value for their own life. So that's where this thing is. That mask came, I knew it was a seal. It brushed through me and jabbered itself into my little golden boy. His blood came flowing out now, intermingled with me. That red fluid turned darker to the universe's back. And here I was, in another box. Not as dark as the thunderous sea or the pits of existence, but dark enough to make me want to explore. Hey, I spoke that in such a fun way and so annoying. But yeah, in case you were too like mesmerized by my voice, the penguin died and he's in a box of red blood, and this can be equated, and this was my way of saying that it was the trauma that the celestial being saw when they saw something die that they liked for the very first time in their life. I touched the box. Now it was cloth and wood. First time I felt these. Wait, why am I feeling this? I extended my hand towards my left and struck the wood, making a creaking sound as the box opened up. Why is my existence here with my essence? Where is my essence? I mean, obviously, this person is supposed to be traveling within themselves, within their own soul. But now suddenly their soul has material existence in a material world where neither of those two things were supposed to exist. They are obviously scared. I close my eyes and take a deep breath. Why am I breathing? What is breathing? I never needed this. Nevertheless, I need to take a breath. So I do. I close my eyes as I do. I feel myself within me. I am here. I am true. I am material. I step out of the box. My feet, which I didn't know existed like this, are dropping the ice-cold water of the oceans. I make loud thumping noises as I walk. I don't think the universe that I was in ever made such noises, such loud noises. The crickets chirp, my feet, they thud. I obviously woke someone up. Who's there? She mumbled and kind of screamed. You know, this she mumbled kind of screamed is like when you're sleeping and you shout at the other person that, why are you waking me up? But you're also mumbling because you're sleepy. So this is the kind of mumble that this is. Why am I speaking? What was that sound? Why am I speaking like this? I have no idea. I am in a mood. I'm high on something. Her soul screamed so. Nope. It wasn't her soul. It knew it were me. It was her consciousness that said, that asked for the pleasantries. Let me go check what that metal clanking noises were. A stray cat has been entering the kitchen of my house. So it was her. She made, like, she touched some utensils and something, and then that made the noise. Okay, he's like, I obviously woke someone up. Her soul screamed, so nope, it wasn't her soul. The soul knew that it were me. It was a consciousness that wanted the pleasantries. I was about to open my mouth to say, but her consciousness gave me a headache. I could feel the temples on my head increasing, the bones were building within themselves, growing like yeast. It grew, and with the growth of that, my horns came out. They came out and they curled. As they curled, I felt my own consciousness now growing. My consciousness's eyes, they glistened. It neighed like a horse. It wanted to ram its head through things. Who is this who buds within me? By the time she came near to me, my body had started to disappear again, back into the box of the penguin's blood. I could hear the woman, Rosa. She was breaking down and screaming, and she was screaming, "Devil! Who is this devil whose head you've placed upon me?" I wanted to ask, but no questions. My voice wouldn't reach her. I feel my children who had now followed me till here. My cat opened the door and he just like entered the room. When your like animals do something which is this cute, they open the door, they are like autonomous. At first it's cute. Okay, yay! My cat did something nice, he did something cute. But then, bitch, close the door. I had to stand up and close the door myself. I had to do work. Are you gonna pay me for the work that I did for you, Plutus? Okay, so I feel my children who followed me till here. I just realized this can sound like sperm. Okay, I'm reading it again. I feel my children who followed me till here. They entered through the air. They entered the soil and crossed it all. The stones, the lava, the diamond, the gold, the fuel, the skeletons. They come outside, out the other side, under the roof of Rosa. They accumulate there like flies and they build the throne grander than the whole planet itself. Out of the box, I know there would be only one place for me to go and lay on. The throne that's made for me by my children. My cat's back to licking his balls. I plunge out of it. My hands are similar to that of Rosa now. I know I am slender. I walk to my children, walking with these ribbons attached to me, which hold nothing else anymore. They support nothing. They are just there. I sit and I lift my index finger. I want you to like actually feel this. You are a celestial who is now suddenly becoming a devil, and you have a throne which is as big or bigger than the earth. And you walk there, you're slender, and you sit on it and you raise your index finger, and a name that my children gave me appears. Koi, it says. Well, that's who I am, if that's what you think I should be. I really hoped us for us to be friends, Koi. But I don't know you, nor do I want to. You're bound by this consciousness that's not your own. You don't owe your shape to their perception. Koi, be a better friend to yourself. Nevertheless, Koi says, hello, Rosa Latoya. I am what you call despair. Dun, 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 dun. That was the end of the story. And why I wrote this story is something I'm actually going to tell you guys once I finish the entire research, get triggered 500 times. And yeah, so one thing about the whole thing of the research is that we are not very sure about names of a few people here. And we also do not have a history or background check on the major protagonist of the story. If it helps, I did look into the kind of locality and the place that the story unfolded, which I'll tell you as soon as we come to that relevant sector. Okay, as I told you, this is the case of the Ammon's Haunt, And it is also known as the House of 200 Demons. That's why my story had 199 children and one major celestial. Or it's also known as the Zach Bagans Demons House, among other things. Oh, also, a lot of this research is taken from this article called IndieStar, and I'm like literally verbatim copied it from there. And there's another article on Medium, which is written by somebody who actually knew the family personally. And the rest is, you know, a little bit from Ghostbusters, most of it from my own understanding of things by the very end of it. So I'm just saying this such that nobody can go ahead and say, you plagiarized this thing. Yes, I plagiarized it because when I was researching it, I had a deadly headache. Anyway, so let's catapult ourselves to 2011, where nobody knew that there's going to be a pandemic, that Koi is going to come and make the world a happy place because he's the freaking cutest bitches. And okay, this Koi is me Koi, not the demon Koi that we just talked with. In November 2011, Ammon's family moved into a rental home and the dogs have started to bark. On 28th Carolina Street in Gary, Illinois. Now this entire place, the city basically, is crime ridden, and it was once called the most murderous or the most criminally active, dangerous town in the United States. The specific neighborhood that they were in, according to some sources, was a poverty-stricken neighborhood. And to get a perspective of where it's 25 miles from downtown Chicago. Anyway, so it was in November 2011 that the Ammons family moved into this house, which I think I already told you. Now, the family consisted of Latoya Ammons, the mother, Rosa was Latoya's mother and Latoya's three children. Now this lane at the time was a very quiet lane with small one-story homes. Now what happened here is big black flies suddenly started to swarm in front of the screened-in porch of Latoya in the December. Now December, according to what I was able to gather in Gary, is actually very chilly, and there's a chance that it's also snowing. But then I read that since it's like so close to Chicago, does it snow in Chicago? I'm not sure. If it does, perfect. If it does not, I'm sorry. But anyway, flies in all weathers are so freaking irritating. Imagine an entire swarm in front of your house at all times. Talk about yes, it was just a note that I've written, talk about the fly that wanted to live in my hair, and then I continue writing. This was like a comment I was supposed to make. So yesterday or the day before yesterday, I was painting and there was a fly which kept on getting inside my hair, then getting stuck and then making weird noises, and I used to headbang and then it lift. It was very annoying but very funny at the same time. Anyway. So when this fly thing happened, Rosa was like, it's Rosa Campbell. She was like, this is not normal. They killed them, but they kept on coming back. And one day out of the blue, it just stopped. Then another thing started to happen, in the house, that they were noises. Now there's one thing to note that these houses were built in the 1920s or the 30s, so they're like fairly old, thus it wasn't uncommon for these houses to make noises. But in this case, usually after midnight, Rosa and Latoya both said they occasionally heard a steady clump of footsteps climbing the basement stairs, the creak of a door opening between the basement and the kitchen. Nobody was there when they checked it, but yeah, it was kind of creepy, but also justifiable that the house was basically making noises. But this is like, you know, the basic haunting stuff. Things are gonna get so hot and spicy, you're gonna die. One night when like Rosa woke up, she saw a shadowy figure of a man who was about 7 feet tall, pacing her living room. And she leapt out of her bed to investigate, and she found large, wet, footprints according to some sources and according to others, boot prints. And she even said that she actually saw this, according to some sources, they say that Rosa said that this man walked out of her closet and then walked around the house. Which reminds me, maybe I should also consider coming out of the closet, like, you know, my own closet sometime. But closets are stuffy places, but it's sometimes safe there. So I'm going to remain in my closet for a little while. So, but imagine a 7 feet tall person walks out of a closet and she goes to check on him. I will die there. I will not go to check on this thing. But she said that when she went on to check, the thing slowly became fainter and fainter and then suddenly disappeared, leaving just the footprints. This also sounds like a one night stand gone wrong. You wake up and the person's just gone and it's the muddy footprints that's left behind and whatever mess that they created in your life and emotional stuff. And this is where the story of mine is interpreted, where in the celestial, who was actually a nice, normal person, was forced upon to become a devil because she got scared and her consciousness manifested that celestial organism becoming a horned, angry, despair-causing creature or being. On March 10th, 2012, around 12 a.m., the family was mourning the death of a loved one. According to some sources, this was an uncle with a group of friends and, like, common people, common friends, the circle, whatever. So you can, like, understand their mental state. It's 2 a.m. They usually did not sleep that long, according to the IndyStar. And when this happened, all of them, my cat just placed his head on this, on my pillow, and he's like looking at me. He's not looking at me, his eyes are closed, and I'm like, oh my god, he's so cute. But yeah, okay, where was I? Yeah, so a small group was mourning the passing away of a relative, most probably a close one. So when they were doing this around 2 a.m., they heard a scream, "Mama! Mama!" And in Rosa's bedroom, and everybody ran to check who it was. And it happened to be the 12-year-old daughter or the granddaughter, depending whose perspective we are looking at, who was supposed to be sleeping, but she was sleeping. She was unconscious, but she was sleeping in the air. She was levitating. And according to the accounts of events, the Ammons and the people in the house, the guests, they surrounded the girl and started to pray. Eventually, in a matter of some seconds or minutes, the girl, she descended back to the bed, and then she woke up. When she woke up, she had no memory of her flying. Now that sucks. One should remember when they flied in their room, you know. This is like a next level astral projection nightmare. The relatives who were there and who also prayed the girl down, they were so traumatized after this that they left A, immediately, B, never spoke to them, according to some sources, and C, never came back to the house because it was, oh my god, no. Anyway, so this happened. Then this also means that the spirit of the house was actually very smart and cognitive enough to create an auditory hallucination with over 5 adults and then obviously make the kid levitate, which is unoriginal, but still. Also, it was also stated that whenever a new person used to come to the house or a friend used to come in, they used to witness something horrible and then leave. Now, this also helped me realize that this can be a very good idea to make sure that people do not bother you by coming into your house. Just make something levitate. If it's a child, perfect. Traumatize them beyond repair and voila, you are happy. But these guys did not want this to happen. So they got orchestrated from the society because of this, and they had just themselves to fend off too. And a lot of people would say that, okay, your fucking child was flying, so leave the house. And this is something that we do in all horror movies and all things which are related to the paranormal. Or if not, if you cannot leave the house, just throw the fucking child away because the child is not working properly. It is not a proper child. But Latoya could not bring herself to do either of these two things because A, breaking the lease would put a very big financial restraint which she could not afford, and throwing away the child was not something which came to her brain, I believe. And so what she did was she started approaching churches. Now, most of the priests were highly skeptical about the entire thing, because if somebody calls you up and is like, my child is like flying in the air, what should I do? You would not believe them, really. And especially when you are like a priest, which is kind of counterintuitive, but also makes sense that the religious people are actually more skeptical than the other people, because they're like, no, this did not happen. So that happened, but one church actually gave them some solutions instead of simply going back to the chambers of pubescent boys. And they said that they should clean the house with bleach and ammonia and use olive oil to draw crosses on every door and window while reciting the 91st plasm. After the church's suggestion, Amin said that she poured olive oil on her three children's hand and feet, smeared oil in shapes of crosses on their forehead, and this really did not help. So she decided to take help from two psychics, who told her 200 spirits, energies, evil demons, devils, abominations, or whatever you wanna call them, lived in the house. Now, of course, all of these words are highly offensive and I was using them in a sarcastic manner. I will tell you why I think they're offensive and why I get triggered by the entire story and why I'm actually doing this entire story to do the little segment on how stupid human beings are at times. But I was also thinking while reading this, isn't this like witchcraft, psychics and stuff, and it's condoned by church and Christians? Now, if they are doing this, they are betraying God. But since witches actually gave a proper ideology, so the witches are stronger than the god. And yeah, anyway, the clairvoyant advice was to make a small altar in the basement and do a cleansing of the house. She asked them to cover a table in white sheet, place white candles on it, and put a statue of Mary, Joseph and Jesus on it. She then instructed Latoya to open the Bible and start reading certain plasms from it. And she said that everybody in the house was donned in white t-shirts, wore white scarves around their heads, and it was like whitey nicey. So they started to burn sage and sulfur around the house to make sure that the demons, that they go away. And they started to like work their way down from up. The smoke was so thick that they could hardly breathe, and Latoya drew crosses with the smoke all over the house. This sounds like a very godlike weed party, you know. And voila, for the next 3 days, all things were quiet. I did like a typo while speaking, and I like re-listened to that recording, and that third voice came in again, and I do not know what's causing it. It's like literally there's no voice or a sound right now which can make that voice, but that thuds are coming, and I do not know why. I do not know how, what's happening. Is this podcast actually that haunted? Anyway, for 3 days nothing happened when she did this cleansing, and we know something as willy-nilly like this usually annoys the spirits. And after 3 days, again, 3 days is a very specific number, which I was thinking, is it like a mockery to the stability, since triangle is considered to be the most stable shape? Or is it a mockery to the Holy Trinity? But I don't think quote-unquote demons really care about the Holy Trinity to actually make a mockery about them. They just happen to scratch people with three, whatever. Alright, stop giving so much attention to yourself. That's too much credit. Anyway, now after the entire thing, when this shit went bad, the family said the demons possessed Latoya and her children. The ages of her three children was 7, 9 and 12. The kids' eyes, they bulged, and randomly they started to smirk, and like evil smiles crossed their faces, which I think children are since inherently evil, so it's obvious they like they're just like their real selves are coming out. But the weird thing was that their voice became deep and they started to sound like adults in between while speaking, like I just did right now. I was not possessed, but I was just, I don't know why I did that. However, Rosa, she said that she was immune to the attack because she was born with a protector that prevented her from being possessed. This protector, according to some sources, was the guardian angel. But this also sounds like a very grandma thing to say. It's like, you know what? I'm protected by God. You are the Slytherin, not Slytherin, you are the slimy bitches who need to die, who will die. I will just live forever, you know. Though this thing was becoming so bad that the family was consistently not sleeping well at night, so much so that the children were missing a lot of time in school and they could not sleep. They were physically, mentally unwell, and there were even times when LaToya used to take them all to a motel in the middle of the night such that they can at least have one night's sleep. Now, finally, LaToya reached out to Dr. Jeffrey Onyekwu. He was a primary care physician and he had been a doctor for a very long time. She explained to him what has been happening and she insisted that demons has been possessing them. Dr. Jeffrey was a man of science and he was like, this must be a reasonable explanation for the children's behavior. And he visited the family's home to observe them and their conduct basically shocked him. He deemed it very necessary to call law enforcement when the children suddenly started to curse him and trashed about and then finally suddenly passed out on looking at him. An ambulance transported the children to the North Lake Methodist Hospital. One of the boy regained consciousness and started to act normally. The other one was still violent and he was restrained. When the police responded to the situation, they heard the doctor's complaint and gave Rosa and LaToya to explain the situation. A representative from DCS, that is the Division of Children's Services, Miss Washington, and a psychologist was also present to understand things. Now what I'm going to read next is an actual report from, like an actual legit report that I found, and it's going to be talking about all the claims and stuff that they had. Instead of copying things from articles, I thought it would make more sense if I read this out because it's legal, kind of governmentally binding document. Now it says that children are in need of services pursuant IC 31 to 34.1. See attachment section. I do not know what all of these things mean, but I'm just saying it because it was interesting to read that. It also notes that the children's physical or mental health condition will be seriously impaired or seriously endangered if the children are not immediately taken into custody. Alright, so it does not start very well. Now it says that RS states that the children were at the primary care physician's office and he sent them to the ER. RS states that the mother has reported that there are demons in the home and that they are attacking the children. RS, I do not know what RS is. Report source. Yes. Report source states that they reported that there are ghosts in the home, thousands of them, and he can see them. The RS states they believed that a month ago everything was relatively normal, but the family recently moved unaware of where they were moving into. Da da da. And it's stated like the facts and evidence of FCM Washington conducted an assessment at the hospital. Miss Washington interviewed Miss LaToya Ammons, her three children, and various medical staff. The medical staff stated that Miss Ammons reported various stories regarding demons and spirits, and she said that her home was infested by various demons. The medical staff also reported that the children observed the children and heard the 7-year-old making growling noises, and his eyes rolled back into his head far enough to reveal just the whites of it. They reported that the children were at the primary doctor's office and they observed one to be lifted and thrown into the wall without nobody touching him. Gary Police Department went to the home, and the home had multiple religious shrines, Bibles throughout the home, plenty of food, and the home was clean. Medical staff also reported that the ghost attacked him and his brother. The alleged ghost attacked him and his brother, and the mother stated that she had taken the children to various temples and churches to remove these demons, but with no avail. It is also stated in the report that the physical, it's actually 5 a.m. in the morning, so I have all the reason to be stupid. I have an exam at 9 a.m. and what the fuck? I'm having anxiety now. They said that the children had a physical outburst of hitting and kicking the brother and the grandmother. The younger 7-year-old headbutted the grandmother, but soon calmed down. The 9-year-old stated that the ghosts are attacking him and his brother, and when the social worker came into the room to evaluate Miss Ammons, the eyes of the 7-year-old rolled back to his head as usual, and his teeth and he exposed his teeth and started to growl. It's a basic child thingy. They are all animals inside. The 12-year-old reported that at times she had weird thoughts and unnatural events started to take place in the homes during the evening time. She also reported being thrown across the room and grabbed by dark shadows a few nights ago and had a greenish blue bruise under her wrist. Miss Ammon requested the help for her children, and she stated that she had been living in this house since November 2011 and till January 2012. Miss Ammon said that she noticed that weird changes had been happening in her children and herself. When a psychological evaluation was completed on Miss Ammons, it was found that she was of sound mind and there was no concern of her mental stability by the time by the hospital psychiatrist. Now, something which was the most interesting and the craziest thing that has ever to happen in the entire universe is when the caseworker, Miss Washington, entered the room. She found Latoya and Rosa and the children there. And one of the 9-year-old was holding the hand of Rosa, and he suddenly started to walk back, growled, his eyes rolled back, and he climbed the wall and the roof of the room and started to growl and shit, and his facial expression changed, and I'm getting like literal goosebumps. Just imagine how this happened. Oh, sorry. This was the 7-year-old who did this, and this happened when they started to discuss the placement for him and like taking him away. And when he like climbed up the wall in a very different deep voice, almost adult-like, he said, "It's time to die and I will kill you soon," as he looked around the entire room. He had a weird grin on his face as he did all of this, and he just simply flipped over, landed on his feet in front of his grandmother and quieted down and simply sat on the chair and became her own self. Miss Washington and all the psychologists in the room left the room, and they went to the attending doctor, Dr. Richardson, and told him what just happened. He did not believe it, and he came in and asked the child to perform the act again. But the kid did not even remember what had happened, and stated, "I did not walk up a wall. I cannot walk up a wall," which is obvious. Nobody can walk up a wall, even if it's like an adult. So yeah, so this is an actual proper report. It has a serial number, document ID, that is 297561, CPS history, their home, their health, need accommodations, everything. It's like a proper legal document which states this, which is like compiled by actual people. Now, anyway, when this happened, the Ammons spent the night in the hospital, and it was actually the birthday of their 7-year-old son who was turning 8. The next day, they celebrated his birthday. The DCS Like, and he was still in the hospital, but the other two went back home. The next day, the DCS officials asked the parents to bring the other children to the hospital, and they celebrated the birthday. They sang, they ate a miniature cake, and the news was broken that children won't be going home, that the DCS had taken the emergency step of taking custody of the children without court order. It says that all children were experiencing spiritual and emotional distress, as Washington wrote in her DCS form. Ammons told the news outlets that she later gave a lot of interviews to that her children cried because they did not want to be separated. I mean, duh. She said that, and I quote, "We'd already been through so much that and fought so hard for our lives. It was obvious that we are a team and we were beating it. Whatever we were fighting, we made it together as a team and they separated us." So someone from the hospital chaplain actually called Reverend Michael Maginot on 12th April 2012, when like all of this happened. I'm like jumping the bus now. And Maginot had been a priest at St. Stephen Martyr Parish in Maryville, which was about, and had been installed there, not installed, like has had been there for over 10 years, but had never heard a request like this. The chaplain asked him to perform an exorcism on the 9-year-old. And he agreed to interview the family after the Sunday Mass a few days later. First step, he wanted to rule out all natural causes for this entire thing, and he visited their house on April 22nd, 2012. For 2 hours, they detailed the Rosa and Latoya detailed the entire phenomena for him. Then Rosa interrupted the entire interview because she saw flickering of bathroom lights. The flickering stopped each time that the Reverend walked into the bathroom to like check it, which he said that, "Oh my God, lights are flickering. So it's a demonic presence." And he did that. And he also went like, "It must be scared of me," because whenever he used to enter it, the flickering used to stop. And I'm like, yeah, sure. He's obviously the demons, the 200 legions of demons are scared of you, Reverend, the one who has never done an exorcism in his life or ever heard about a demon in 10 years of his little life. Sure. Then on the interview, they continued, but then again, it was seen that the blinds in the kitchen were swinging while there was no air currents. And he also said that he saw wet footprints throughout the living room. Ammons complained about having a headache, and Maginot was like, "All right, if you're having a headache, what I'm going to do is what all Christian people do, put a fucking cross to your head." He did that, and she started to convulse and started to go into some sort of seizure. After a total of 4-hour long interview, the Reverend was convinced that the family was being tormented by demons. And he said he also believed that there were ghosts in the house, but majorly demons. Maginot started to bless the house before he left, praying and reading passages from the Bible while he sprinkled holy water in each room. He told the ladies of the house to leave the house because it was not safe, duh. And this time, since there were only 2 of them and 3 children were in the custody of the government, they went on to live with a relative for an indefinite amount of time. However, under a week, the 2 women had to come back to their house because of the DCS family check and like case manager, that they have to come to check the condition of the home again. Washington asked a Lake County police officer to come with her, and along with him, 2 other guys came up, who are Gary and Hammond from Gary and Hammond Police Department. Sorry, it's not their names, and they joined them for, and I quote, "professional curiosity." Ammons obviously refused to go inside, but Rosa said that, "I'm gonna come with you." On the main floor, there were three bedrooms, a living room, one bathroom, hardwood floors, a small style kitchen, a door in the kitchen which led to the basement with concrete floors. Directly under the stairs, there was a dirt and patch of dirt spot, and the concrete around it was jagged, as though it had been broken to make the dirt visible. It was kind of like a deliberate ritual had happened there, which also made me think that a lot of ancient religions / cultures used dirt under the house to as a way of opening up the gates to the underworld, not hell, because according to me, hell isn't even a thing, because there's no said good or evil, it's all a matter of perspective. But anyway, so they went around and they saw the makeshift altar that Litoya had made for, according to the clairvoyances, and it was still in place with all the rings and stuff that she made. During an interview in the house with Rosa, one of the audio recorders of the officer malfunctioned and the power light flashed on and off, indicating that the batteries are dying. But they had changed the batteries that very day. It was like a fresh battery. Another officer recorded the audio. When it was played back later, he heard an unknown voice whisper, "Hey," according to the official police records, actually. The officers also took photos of the house, and in one of the photos on the basement stair, they saw a cloudy white image of the upper right-hand corner, where an officer, upon enlarging the photo, the cloud appeared to resemble a face. There was also something which was green in color and looked like a female face. Now, this can be that placebo effect, like that effect in which we make sense out of objects, but it was actually noted that none of these two obstructions were caused by dust particle or something on the camera. It was actually there in the frame. So whatever it was creepy as fuck. Austin, one of the police officers who was there, also snapped a lot of pictures with his iPhone and had seemed to captured a few strange silhouettes in them. The radio in his police-issued Ford also malfunctioned on his way home. Austin said that later, when he tried to open his garage, it refused to open even though power was there everywhere else. Now, when he started to drive his personal car, that was a 2005 Infiniti, It started to move backward and forward all on its own. He said that the when he got it checked at the dealership, the mechanic told him that the motor of the driver's seat was broken without any real reason and could have been fatal, because it could have caused distraction and like killed him. The DCS found that Litoya Ammons neglected her children's education by not having sent to school, and it was like, yeah, of course the children weren't sleeping well, how can they go to school? But anyway, but when she was told this, she said that the spirits would make them sick and they would be up all night without sleep. DCS temporarily placed her daughter and the older son in St. Joseph's Carmelite home in East Chicago. The youngest child was placed in an institution in Wheatfield called Christian Heaven for his psychiatric evaluation. The clinical psychologist, Stacy White, who evaluated 7-year-old, said that the boy tended to act possessed when he was challenged, redirected, or asked questions that he did not want to ask. So in her evaluation, she wrote that he seemed to be coherent and logical, except when he talked about demons. The child has now actually become 8 now. When they used to talk about demons, his stories became bizarre, fragmented, and illogical. I mean, you're talking with a 7-year-old about demons. How do you expect them to make sense? But okay. But the weird thing was that his stories also changed each time that he told them when it came to the said subject. He also even tried to change subjects. Talking about subject, he talked about how math's problem can be changed and can you go to the outer space and sometimes, can you die if you go to space? Or how do you get to space? Do you have to wear a helmet and a suit? Yeah, that's my devil voice. Wright believed that the 8-year-old did not suffer from any true psychotic disorder. She quotes that this appeared to be an unfortunate, sad case of the child who had been induced into a delusional system perpetrated by his mother and potentially reinforced by other relatives, she wrote in her evaluation. Another psychologist, Joel Schwartz, who evaluated the other two, the daughter and the son, came to the similar conclusion. The Latoya, her three kids, and Rosa insisted that the rest of them were possessed. DCS had to set goals for the family, and one of them stipulated that they are not allowed to discuss demons being possessed and take responsibility for their actions. They also needed to participate in therapy and address the past behavior. While the officers credited Latoya to have a very close bond with her children and maintaining a good environment around them to the best of her abilities, they also said that she needed to use alternate form of discipline and not directly related to religion and demon possession. I mean, imagine a mother going like, "Oh, this is a darling, can you just like possess this child? He's not eating his green beans. Give him hell, destroy his fucking body and his life." What? Why was this even written in that thing? I do not even understand what kind of mother would actually want the like what kind of non-psychopathic mother would want their child to get possessed by a demon as reprimand. Though this kind of parenting would be something which I'd be interested in. Let the demons do the parenting for you. Anyway, they visited the place again for another evaluation, but this time Washington actually refused to go back in the house because she was so disturbed with the things that she saw the last time. So instead of her, Samantha Elick went in, and when she went in, she touched a gooey sticky substance there which was under the stair with no source of origination that she could find. Along with all these guys, the Revenant also came with them, and he told the police that he wanted to check the dirt under the stairs for a pentagram or personal object that might have been cursed. He said that a pentagram might indicate a demonic presence or a possible portal to hell. Oh my god. According to police, that he said. Or if somebody died in the house and was buried under the stair, it could signify the paranormal activity. So the officers dug a little hole beneath the stairs and they unearthed a pink press-on fingernail, a pair of white underwear, a political shirt pin, a lid of some small cooking pan, socks with bottoms cut off the ankle, candy wrappers, a heavy metal object that looked like a weight for drapery cord. As they stated, did not like really does not sound like a ritual and sounds like rather new age than an ancient course per se. Anyway, to make sure that the oil that they found was not actually placed in by Rosa and Latoya, the two officers cleaned it. The officers then sealed the room for 25 minutes and they stood nearby guarding the room that nobody could possibly walk in. There was some kind of vehicle which just crossed near my house, making a very weird noise, and my heart skipped a beat. Anyway, when they sealed the room, they went back in and the oil had reappeared. The Reverend said that the liquid is a manifestation of paranormal or demonic presence. It's evil. And he asked for the Bishop of Gale, Dale Milzik's permission to perform an exorcism there. The bishop did not approve of this despite the multiple proofs that they have, because exorcisms can go fatally wrong. So the Reverend did an intense blessing on the house to expel bad spirits. And I mean, I like how an intense blessing is a thing. I just like the word. After this, that very same day, Reverend also performed a minor exorcism on Latoya. And the ritual basically consisted of prayers, statements, and appeals to cast out the demons. But like, this also brought me to the question that if the house is the reason why they're getting possessed, if the house is properly exorcised, there's no need for people to be involved in the entire thing. But I'm not a Christian, I'm not a father, and I surely am not a person who even thinks demons exist in the form that people make them exist. Two police officers with the counselor, Samantha Elick, had attended the said ritual. Elick, after observing the entire thing, she said that she would not go as far as to say that there was something demonic, but she did say that she got chills during the entire two-hour ride. She felt that there was somebody in the room with her, breathing down her neck, and there was, and she noticed that she had a string of medical problems after visiting the home. A week after doing this, she got 3-degree burns from touching a motorcycle. Within 30 days, she broke 3 of her ribs while jet skiing, broke a hand when she hit a table, then broke an ankle when she was running. And I was like, yeah, okay. Then she said that she had friends who did not want to talk to her because they believed that something had attached to her, and she was like, I'm already evil, try to find something that's not evil and corrupted, they wouldn't waste their time on me. But anyway, after the minor ritual, the Reverend told Latoya that she needs to look up names of demons who could be possibly tormenting her. My god, my throat is... I like how while speaking my voice suddenly changes its tempo and everything. Anyway, so she was asked to do homework on demons and demonology. And when she was doing it with a friend, the computer that they were sharing kept on shutting down. She felt sick and lightheaded, but she found a few names that fit. One of these names was Beelzebub, the Lord of Flies, which technically is not a biblical demon because he was introduced into the pantheon rather recently, less than 1,000 years ago, and he was not even a part of the anyway. But Latoya also named a few other high-ranking demons who were assigned to her, including lieutenant sergeants and among other things. I mean, there were 200 demons. It's a pretty obvious thing if you think there's a demon in hell and they're hell-bent on destroying the entire world because they have nothing else better to do. There's an entire legion in your house, honey. There are 200 fucking demons. But after the minor rite, the bishop suddenly decided to give permission to exercise the amens for reasons I'm not or ever gonna be sure of. Like, an intense blessing was required for an intense exorcism. The ritual for a major exorcism is exactly same as a minor exorcism, according to the Reverend himself. But since this time it has the backing of the Catholic Church, it becomes more powerful. And especially this concerns adolescent boys, the Catholic Church gets in hard on whenever it comes to saving them or just like seeing them. But anyway, the Reverend ultimately performed 3 major exorcisms on Latoya. 2 of them were in English and the last one was in Latin, which happened in June 2012 in his church. During each, the Reverend praised God, condemned the devil, the simple satanic power, you are enemy, you are bad, God is nice, fuck off, and that is supposed to work. He could see that the demons that possessed her were very, very strong because Latoya Ammons was constantly fighting them back. 2 officers were actually kept around the... Ooh, I just remember. Remember the hospital time when the children were acting also strangely and they were fighting each other? It took 5 men at some instances and 9 men at other instances to control boys who were like 9-year-old because that's the amount of energy and power that they were giving out. That's the amount of anger that they had. So that was also weird because they had kind of unnatural, supernatural strength. Anyway, back to the exorcism of Latoya. She says that she tried to pray with the Reverend until it became too painful. She says that I was hurting all over inside out. I'm trying to do my best and be strong, but eventually she did fall asleep. She said that the pain was so, so, so intense. It felt as if she was giving birth, and like giving birth is, I've read, is a very intense and a very painful thing, but she was doing that. In between the second and the third exorcism, the Reverend went on a retreat, like a vacation. And I was like, yeah, okay, self-care, I think. But okay, he went on a vacation while this woman was dying because of demons and the Catholic Church who made demons a thing. But okay, anyway. So, a woman was actually assigned to help the Reverend throughout this entire process. And when he went on his vacay, she gave LaToya a letter on which she had written a name and surrounded it with blessed salt. And she said whenever she would have any nightmares or problems, just burn the envelope. Now, at this time, the family, or like in this case for the time being, LaToya and Rosa moved to Indianapolis. But they kept on driving back for exorcisms and court hearings as the children were still in the care of the DCS. But when LaToya got a lot of nightmares, she called up the Reverend, like, being like, come back from your vacation and just like fucking exercise the fuck out of me already. But he was like, yeah, you know what, just burn that thing. And she burned the envelope and the nightmares stopped. I'm not sure how that worked, but that happened. The third exorcism was successful. It was in Latin, and LaToya got the custody of her children in November 2012. They moved away, and it was a happily ever after for them. But things are about to get worse. Why? Because the story got out. Suddenly, Gary, it's Indianapolis, not Illinois. I said Gary, Illinois in the beginning. It's not Illinois. I don't know. I think it's Illinois. Fuck. If I said anything wrong, please forgive me. Tweet at me if I said anything wrong. I won't correct it, but I'll appreciate the effort. Anyway, so this entire thing became a media hotspot. The local, the national, the international media. They went on to sniff around the house, 3866 Carolina Street, and by this time the homeowner wanted to rent out the property, but the tenants weren't like really keen on getting their hands into something that's called a demon house, and this, like, yeah, so it was not getting rented anyway. And thus, with all this misfortune, enters the major person of misfortune around the world, Zachary Bigans, who is an American paranormal investigator and an overdramatic annoying fool, much like me, but like, I'm not that annoying, and I have ethics and birds who chirp like shit. Anyway, but you know, I just realized this is like a very low comment for me to say, but his name makes him sound like an asshole. Zachary.
I know, right?
Okay. Anyway, he is the principal host of a Travel Channel series called Ghost Adventures, in case you did not know. Anyway, he won it. He got it. He won it. He got it for $35,000. And he made an entire movie on this house. It's called The Demon House, and I wanted to watch it and like include it in the research, but I did not because it was so freaking annoying and so overdramatized. Like, yes, there's proof all over the movie, but I really did not want to subject myself to that kind of torture for you guys. I'm really sorry for that. I hope you can forgive me. However, according to some reviews that I was reading and like I read about the movie, so he said that there was a lot of evil in the house. His crew was injured throughout the entire thing, and he even got a disease which concerns his vision and a corrective surgery for what might cause blindness, and he wears prisma corrective glasses to basically function with it, which is kind of sad. And this happened when he spent an entire night at the house whilst he asked his crew members to lock him inside. And it also took him 4 years to actually make the entire documentary and then release it, because he thinks the documentary is cursed, but then he released it. And if any nice person knows something is cursed, you will not put it on the fucking internet for people to see. Unless and until it's a marketing strategy wherein you're like, do not watch this or you'll die. And half of all the teenagers anyway want to die, so they'll watch it. And the other half just want to do it because they want to rebel against you. And yeah, there's a lot of conspiracy theory. There was also this thing I just remember that related to the movie, Zach actually said that he had a dream of the house before it became a thing. He had a dream of a 7-foot-long goat-headed celestial that was walking and tormenting people. It was an evil presence, he says. And when he came into the house, he got a psychic with him, and he said that the house had a guardian who was a 7-foot-long goat-headed existence. Also, Rosa also found a dark existence, and in my story too, there was an existence which ended up developing horns because of the paranoia of Rosa, but it might not have happened in real life. I did not want to blame them for the misfortune that happened in their life. Anyway, there are a lot of people who say like this is more of a true crime story than a paranormal story, because LaToya tortured her children beyond recognition and they became violent and such. But that really does not make a lot of sense, because there was no visible proof for that, A. B, then some people are like, this was an entire large hoax by the family to earn money. But A, if it was a hoax, they wouldn't have been able to continue the entire thing when they were away for 9 freaking months and still have different things happening with different people, and still the stories adding up despite them not talking to each other per se. And a 7-year-old doing acrobatics around a room walking up a wall is seriously cannot be a part of a hoax. There are other conspiracies which say since the house were as old as that it was, and it's actually true that there was mold and carbon monoxide around and in the house, so that could have caused delusions and such, because those are the things which can cause, like carbon monoxide can cause that. But the people who experienced paranormal activity outside the house, or people who just went in and felt that vibe or saw things, again, yeah, does not add up. Okay, now do two cents from Koi about this entire charade. Now, I want to talk about how stupid humans can be. Like, seriously, how stupid humans can be. And how the whitewashing of the cultures has happened, which has created spiritual entities in a form of good and bad, evil and good. Because according to me, half of these haunts are caused by humans overreacting. As I mentioned in my story, a celestial was just visiting, and her consciousness imposed her fear onto the celestial, transforming their essence, giving them a part of their consciousness, destroying what they stood for, that was peace, despite the little trauma that they had. And yeah, that entire thing. We can cause things to shift around us. That means we can manifest evil. Now, a lot of times the word devil, demon is used, and like all over throughout the entire research, they were like, we felt an evil presence as soon as we entered the house. There were demons in the house. Who the fuck are you to say that if there's a demon or not? What is the metric of good or evil that comes to your mind? A lot of people are like, all right, if there's a celestial or if there's a god or a spiritual being happening, if they're not helping you, they're bad. Like the horned gods of the forest, they were revered as deities a lot of times, but then again, some of them did not really care about human beings and making lives better for human beings, so they just chilled and do whatever the fuck they wanted to do, took care of their forest, and if anybody intervened, they used to ram their horns into them, and thus most of the reason why they are like horned devils and goat looking devils, which was actually the horned god of the Celtics and the pagans, and the goddess, the green woman and such. But the goddess and the green woman and her characteristics actually match with that of Lilith. But no, we wanna be bitches about everything. There was once a time that all cultures actually had deities, spirits guarding each and every household, which was also visible in this one. But we have this tendency of making everything that we do not understand evil. Spirits do not like that crap. Who are you? Okay, one thing we need to understand is that human beings have been on the existence of the universe for the littlest amount of time. The celestials, the animals, the energies have the right to Earth. They are the natives to this. We are not, we get to coexist with them. That is their goodness, not our worth. Second, we do not have the right to label something good or bad according to our very narrow perspective. Everything simply exists. Nobody wakes up wanting to do evil unless and until they are a psychopath. I'm not saying that all celestials, all spiritual beings are good, but they're not as bad as we have made out them to be. Imagine you are walking in a street and somebody throws holy water at your face and starts to read passages of Bible, which are actually very offensive. Evil Satan, you run away or evil God will kill you or whatever. You will obviously get pissed as fuck and you want to throw that person on the wall and ram them away because they are being fucking annoying when you did not do anything for them. They are painting you in a negative light. They are just judging you because they do not understand you. And if after that point they want to torment you, trust me, they have the right to do it. Fear is not how you make friends. Spirits are not bad. They do not cause fear. You do not just simply understand them. Yeah. That's why I hate the word devil and demon, because the connotation that it has with the strong essence of fear, the good, the bad, the things. Look, the good and the bad, half the people in most of the countries, if you're gay, you are not supposed to exist because you're evil. So now, according to a lot of rule books, like this is an oversimplification thing. A lot of times when we do not understand something such as concepts of sexuality, the LGBTQ plus Q&A, half of the world countries have criminalized this because they simply do not understand it. Now, when we do not understand spirits, we also criminalize them. We are making them feel the exact same way as you would feel for another person. If you are sympathetic towards another human being, the one that you cannot understand, that you better fucking be sympathetic towards a spirit that ends up walking into or around you, because A, it's their space. You are the one who's renting the space from them. B, you do not get to judge them. C, they are not there to harm you. Nobody's there to harm you unless and until you act like an asshole. There's a very, very, very small percentage of spirits that would actually harm another person, a very small percentage of energies who want to harm people or who even want to help people. That does not mean the ones who are helping are good or the ones who are harming are bad. They just are, they have certain traumas, they have certain things that they've witnessed, like every human being. They have as many emotions as you do. They are as human as you are. So you better treat them like that. Nobody has the right to call anything a demon, devil, abomination, evil, or anything, because you do not understand them. Don't be a fucking asshole to everything. And that's it. The following podcast is hosted by Koi On Air, co-presented with Nifix. The music is by Lil Addy. And you can follow me on Instagram as Koi On Air and Twitter too as Koi On Air. And let's have a fun time together. Be nice to people no matter who they are, even if they're not people, even if they're beings, existences, and celestials. I love you. Bye. Most of the times I love you.